Compliance as code and Kubernetes. I don't think I've ever used those two words together, but there is a possible future where you can have both of them together. Welcome to this episode of CloudSecurity Podcast. Today, we're talking about policy management and how you can have policy as code, compliance as code in a Kubernetes project. For this, we had Jim Baguadia from Nirmata. He spoke about Caverno, an open source project. We spoke about things like, why is there a need for policy management and why is Kubernetes not solving this problem on its own? It has pod security, which does a great job of securing a pod. For people who understand that, that's the smallest unit that you can find for a container in Kubernetes. But on the other extreme, you have applications that are being hosted. Like literally, you can have a Windows desktop being provided to your end user from Kubernetes. That is going on today in the Kubernetes world. There are people using Kubernetes in meat clusters. They're using it in submarines, in fighter jets. So all these extremes and policy as something has not been spoken about too much. And in this episode, we try and uncover for the need for policy management. What's the difference between Caverno, OPA? Because sometimes it's like walking into a shopping mart. When you look at the CNCF image, it is like you're looking at, I'm going to walk this aisle. What am I going to pick? Am I going to pick Argo CD or Cluster API or Caverno? Or I may choose another combination of GitOps and something else. So we spoke about that as a measure for how do you walk down that path? And where do you even start with policy management? If you wanted to start talking about policy management, you probably want to like a small list. I mean, it is a complex world. The easiest thing you can do, and again, this is a TLDR version as well on the policy management space, you can find the business requirements, the compliance requirements as a way to start off the conversation and map some of them to policies and then apply them. And maybe when you start to apply them on Kubernetes, that's when you might need a open source project like Caverno or OPA, which is an open policy agent. We spoke about the difference between the two as well. And as always, if this is something that you are trying to learn or a colleague or a friend who's trying to learn more about Kubernetes security and policy management and compliance as code, because they're trying to make the Kubernetes environment a compliant one, please do share the episode with them. As always, really appreciate you sharing the episode as well as sharing how much you're learning with it. It really helps us quite a bit. Talk to a lot of people and help a lot of people understand this, that the world of cloud and cloud security and cloud-native security is quite complex. And we're talking about all of that to help people out. And as always, if you're there on iTunes or Spotify, if you're watching this on Spotify or on YouTube channel, feel free to drop us a review or rating. It really helps us find more guests and it makes me really happy. So thank you so much for doing that. We have a few more episodes for Kubernetes security before we close off the month. And if you are attending KubeCon, which is in Detroit next week, so have a good time. I would love to hear your feedback on what you think about the KubeCon this year before the next episode. Feel free to connect with us on our socials and feel free to share your feedback there, whether you feel KubeCon North America was totally worth your time as well. I will see you in the next episode of Cloud Security Podcast on another Kubernetes security episode. I hope you have a great time and have a safe week. Enjoy. And by the way, happy Diwali to every person celebrating Diwali as well. So I hope you have a great Diwali celebration with for all the Indian fellow sisters, brothers, and persons out there as well. Talk to you soon. All right. Take care. Bye. Peace.
By bringing developers and security together, you don't have to choose between speed and security. Develop fast. Stay secure.
Hey, Ashish. Pleasure being here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming in. For people who may not know who Jim is, if you can probably start with just a brief intro about who you are and where you are these days and how you got you where you are today, that'd be awesome, man.
Absolutely. Yes, I'm Jim Baguadia, co-founder at Nirmata, as well as a maintainer on Caverno, which is a policy engine we created for Kubernetes. So just going back a bit in terms of my path to where we are today. So I'm a software developer, still pretty active, both on open source as well as some of our other products. Starting out after I got my grad school degree back at the University of Illinois in Chicago, I started in the telecommunications network management space. So to me, what was always fascinating is how software gets applied and how it transforms our daily lives. And perhaps the most complex domain I could find at that time was telephony, and seeing it's mission critical. It's almost you need it for life. We all take it for granted. But there's a lot of complex software that works together to make all of that happen. And that's where we've learned about large-scale distributed system, building these type of global networks, managing software at scale. So yeah, I guess after that, I moved to Silicon Valley, San Jose, where I currently reside in about 99, worked at a number of different startups, and eventually ended up founding Nirmata in 2013 with my co-founders, Ritesh and Damien.
Awesome. With the Kubernetes being the CNCF project for free, it is free for policy management in the Kubernetes space. I just wanted to start with the foundational pieces. I think it's usually always helpful because we get a mix of people who may be new to Kubernetes, but trying to learn it. But we also have people who are probably quite veteran in the space as well. How do you define Kubernetes control plane?
Yeah, great question, right? So going back again to my days in the telecom space, if you look at any complex system, there's a layered architecture model that telecommunications introduced, which got adopted by networking, as well as now, of course, with Kubernetes and distributed systems. So you have your management plane, which is kind of like the top level, and it coordinates, manages, configures, does fault observability, things like that across your entire system. Yep. Then you have your control plane, which in telephony is used for signaling as well as protocol management. For us today, it's more like keeping in the Kubernetes world, it's schedulers. So if you think about how Kubernetes works, everything is a control loop. You declare your desired state and configuration, and the controllers make that happen. Like they place a pod, they will make sure that your application is self-healing. Even for other add-ons as custom resources, it's the same idea. You would write controllers for that. So all these controllers run in the control plane. And then finally, you have a data plane, which is where your applications and the communication, the data for your system resides. Now, the whole idea is decoupling these planes and making the system highly reliable, highly self-healing, fault-tolerant.
Right. Talking about controllers, another word that keeps coming up with Kubernetes is admission controller. What is that?
Yeah, so Kubernetes, as a modern system, everything goes through API calls. So most distributed modern systems are API first. And in Kubernetes, any operation that you want to do, whether it's through kubectl or other management tools, goes, you know, it issues an API call. An API call goes through different phases, like authentication and authorization. And then there's the next phase is admission controls. And what that means is Kubernetes, because it's designed to be pluggable, it's designed to solve a broad amount of use cases, you can have your own admission controllers which inspect every API request and then can allow or deny that request or can trigger other automation and trigger other things based on that API request. It's an extremely powerful building block which lets us do things like what Kiverno does for security and for automation, and it works seamlessly with the control plane components for Kubernetes.
Right, because I mean that kind of leads me into the whole policy management thing as well. If you have admission controller, why do you need a policy management, I guess?
Yeah, so the thing is, so let's step back and think about what policies are. And as a developer, if somebody comes, when I was working at larger companies, if my manager came to me and said, hey, let's apply policies, I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't want to deal with this. Go away, let me do my work and I don't need more policies. But today, if you look at the cloud native way of doing policies, it's very different. And think about Kubernetes is the first platform designed for DevSecOps. Mm-hmm. It brings together these three roles. And these three roles need to collaborate on various aspects of the system. So how do you do that? Now, of course, you could have tickets and you could be on Slack trying to collaborate, which is great. You should do that. But at the same time, we need something better. We need something automated. The whole world has gone with, of course, in the last couple of years, distributed, and we want to be async in our communication. So what better way than expressing policies as a digital contract, policy as code, make sure it's something that we manage just like we manage our apps or other software assets, and allowing these different roles to collaborate on it. So the whole idea is policies differ dramatically based on the organization, based on the compliance requirements. There are some standards, of course, which all of us should be applying for any Kubernetes cluster. And it's a bit scary how many folks end up in production without thinking of this. So like pod security standards, which are native to Kubernetes now, you definitely want to apply. But to be able to manage pod security even in a flexible manner, you need pluggable admission controllers, which let you customize the policies to your needs. And that's where projects like Kiverno and others come in to allow that policy definition and declaration, much like you can do with other resources in Kubernetes.
Oh, right. So wait, port security, which I think was deprecated off beyond a certain point. Is that something that we would have been like the primitive version of policy management where before it became open source? What were people doing then?
Yeah. So there's still built-in policy, right? So like network policy is built in into Kubernetes. RBAC is built in into Kubernetes. Things like pod security policy, PSPs, were built in into Kubernetes. Now they're deprecated. There's something called pod security admission, which was its replacement. So those still exist. And that's like a baseline you need to kind of understand and start applying for your overall security posture and model. However, there's a lot more things that are required. Let's take an example of a pod security. So yes, you could enable pod security admission, which does namespace level pod security. But what if you need more granular controls? What if you want better reporting? What if you want some way of sharing these pod security policies, again, using policy as code? In those cases now, you would look at something like Kiberno or other alternatives in the community, which will provide a better implementation of the pod security standards to provide more flexibility, et cetera. But keep in mind, pods are only one, the basic level. So
yeah,
there's
right.
workloads on top of pods, like deployment, stateful sets, daemon sets. There's several other things like services. There's add-ons like Istio and or like Linkerd for service mesh. So the list goes on and on. So you also want to secure those. There's nothing native that Kubernetes provides for those configurations and to secure those, which is where a policy engine becomes super critical.
So is this the same when people go for like a managed Kubernetes as well? Now the cloud service providers have their version as well. Maybe bare metal Kubernetes doesn't allow that. How does this work in like a managed Kubernetes context?
Yeah, great question. There's this notion that because you go to, let's say, a cloud provider and get a managed Kubernetes, they have to be thinking about security. And they do. They do the best they can. But in every cloud provider kind of will show you their shared security model.
Yeah.
And in that shared security model, guess what? You're responsible for securing Kubernetes. They are giving you the control plane components, but any workload, any pod that runs in there, that's the responsibility of the user. You cannot turn around and say, hey, somebody kind of had a container, our workload had a container escape, they exploited something. That's the user's responsibility. And Kubernetes is, you are even with pod security admission, the default setting for pod security admission is privilege, which means you can run anything, right? And it's designed to be easy to get started with, easy to use, because there's always this contention, as you very well know, between free and usability. So you want people to adopt projects, you want them to get, and if you make it too restricted from the beginning, it just there's too many hurdles to get started. So, okay, so you lean towards that usability, but you really, as a platform team or as anybody responsible for production Kubernetes, you have to understand that shared security model, even with managed service providers, or if you're using vanilla Kubernetes, the same applies.
And okay, so we're still shared responsibility model pathway that we can take down the path of. So to your point, if there is no option, like from a pod security perspective, Kubernetes doesn't provide out of the box anything. We kind of go down the path of Kiberno or any of the other OPA or whatever else that kind of comes up being released by people. At that point in time, I imagine in my mind, so that's just one cluster. But most organizations these have multiple clusters as well.
Yeah.
How does this kind of scale to that level?
One minor kind of thing to point out though. So Kubernetes does provide pod security admission built in.
Right.
And it's good to enable that. Kiberno, our kind of position on that is yes, use pod security admission. And use Kiberno to complement and to manage that in a more flexible manner.
Right,
so that
right.
gives you the best security posture. So, but to your point, how do you manage at scale? And today, if you kind of look at enterprises are running, there was a case study from like Mercedes-Benz or somebody, they're talking about 800 clusters.
Yeah,
it sounds like that's a lot. And managing 800 production clusters, deploying things, version control, security.
With a two-people team as well.
Right. That's the other constraint. So to pull that off, you have to adopt cloud-native best practices like GitOps, moving to everything as code, making sure all of your declarations for your cluster config. And today we have projects like Cluster API, which are just dramatically game changers for that. So through Cluster API and other things, you can now have Kubernetes manage other Kubernetes clusters. So it's like Inception for Kubernetes. So you kind of have your Git repos, which are managing these declarative configurations. You use Cluster API to spin up and manage these other clusters, but you have to make sure, again, through policy as code, each one of those clusters is secured. You put the right policies there, but it's all driven through Git. It all starts with a pull request.
Wait, that's awesome. So, but it's almost like who's watching the watcher, I guess, kind of thing then. Who's thinking of the Cluster API then?
Yeah, so one thing, Cluster API, because it's Kubernetes native, you're kind of, again, using Kubernetes to manage clusters. Kiverno integrates very well with that. So you can use Kiverno policies to watch Cluster API resources, both for automation as well as security. And in fact, at GitOpsCon, I have a talk with a product manager from Intuit, and we're going to talk about exactly this use case and how Kiverno can be used to secure and automate some of these Cluster API functions. So yeah, pretty interesting kind of spin on things. But to go back to the management at scale type of challenge, we're seeing it's very interesting, right? So we work with very large enterprises, as you know, from Nirmata, our company perspective, and as we see them adopt Kubernetes, it's not just changing how they're managing applications. It's changing every IT process within their enterprise. They're moving to more using this Git NPR model for infrastructure provisioning, even for deploying VMs on top of Kubernetes, right? To say, you want a new Windows desktop? Guess what? Create a pull request. We don't need a ticketing system. We don't need any of that. And as long as you're using, in that case, of instead of Cluster API, you would use a project called KubeVirt. It will spin up a virtual machine in Kubernetes. You assign it to the user, and everything's tracked through Git as the system of record. Kubernetes now becomes the new system of delivery.
What? Can you do that? I didn't realize you could do that with Kubernetes.
Absolutely, yeah.
So there would be a desktop that would be, I guess, for lack of a better word, the VMware equivalent that from the back in the day where we had, I need a virtual machine, Mr. Admin. And that is being done by a pull request, and I will get a desktop.
Yes, you can get a Windows desktop running on Kubernetes. It's a VM in a container, but to the end user, it looks like a...
What? And so can you, I always thought that, wasn't that like an anti-pattern to have like a really big image on like a port as well?
So there are some trade-offs. So
to your point, what you're saying is it's possible to do that.
It's not only possible, but the cloud providers have been doing that for quite a while. So when you get to maximize their kind of revenues and margins, they are running you. When you get a VM, it's not running necessarily as a VM. It could be running as a container based on which cloud provider you go to.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think apparently serverless is also all containers in the background anyways to begin with. Yeah. So we're definitely living in a world where containers are probably the back end. It feels like, I guess the reason I was surprised was because your serverless functions are primarily just like, hello world or something small. I don't get like a workspace to work on using a container or Kubernetes
background. Which is long-lived, it's stateful. Yes, yeah. I mean, that those, because typically you say, well, containers are great for stateless, short-lived apps.
That's right.
That's no longer the case, right? And what we are also like with projects like Crossplane, which is another CNCF project that allows you to provision cloud resources. So you can use Kubernetes to spin up an S3 bucket, and you can use Kiverno to secure that. So you can have a policy that's saying all of my users or this team can only spin up S3 in this particular region. It has to be encrypted. It has to be secure. You can have all those policies. So it's a completely different, it's a game changer.
Wow. That is a great game changer. So this is mind blowing for me. Maybe just so that I can level the playing field as well, what are some of the common use cases where people kind of think about policy management? Because I think to what you mentioned, to scale port security and to scale across clusters and what your policy will look like, one of the obvious use cases that come to my mind is, if I already have an information security policy, for example, everything should be encrypted. Yeah. I can use a policy management engine to deploy that policy across Kubernetes. Is that the use case, or what are some of the examples you see of?
Yeah, that's a great example, right? So data protection, data encryption, those are very key use cases. So the three categories usually advocate our customers to start with. The first is basic pod security. So make sure you're good with that. You understand how that's managed and how to do that at scale. And by the way, with every version of Kubernetes, pod security also changes. So it's not a static thing. You have to keep in mind, you need to kind of keep up with those changes. You need to understand what that means for your workloads. When new CVEs come up, we are constantly like creating policies to help with that as well. So that's the first level. The second level is workload security, where just like we talked about, it's not just about pod, but it's like your services, making sure you're using encryption at rest, encryption in transit, things like that. And all of that is done through workload at that layer. So like your services, your deployments, your stateful sets, making sure your volumes have the right kind of, again, configuration, et cetera. And then finally, there's a ton of best practices, which also have a key impact on security. So most deployments, most clusters are shared. Kubernetes at its guts is a bin packing scheduler. You to get the maximum value from Kubernetes, you want it to pack applications on a, some subset of resources. So to be able to do that, how do you kind of come up with the right tenancy model? How do you come up with things like making sure that if somebody doesn't have a health check and if their pod keeps spinning, it doesn't impact other applications on that same cluster? So for all of those, there's tons of best practices. So if you go to the Kiverno.io page, there's almost like 230 community-driven policies across these three categories. And then finally, like if you kind of want to go one level above, nowadays container image signing verification is critical. In fact, in the US, there's a federal mandate that anybody supplying software to the government has to provide SBOMs, has to start container image signing, verification, things like that. So that becomes a very key use case. So those four, I would say, are a good starting point. But then as you bring in other things, if you're using Kubernetes, like we were talking about, for other things, you would want to look at security at those layers too.
Yeah. I think nowadays the conversation is not even considered complete if you don't mention SBOM three times at least. Right. It's like SBOM. But I think, to what you said, the chain of custody has become definitely quite important these days. If you have over 200 plus policies from the community, is there like a, I don't know, like a top 10 or like an OWASP top 10 or a top 5 that you normally recommend to people? Because I feel like it'll be overwhelming for people else who's listening into this conversation. For them, they're like, well, that's great, 200 plus policies, but which one do I start with? So is there like a small list that you normally recommend?
Yes. So policies are a building block. They're the how you're doing things. So to kind of start with, and what we do as well as other vendors in the space is you want to map these policies into categories and into what do you want to achieve from an organizational level? So if, for example, let's say OWASP top 10 for Kubernetes is important, you can map these policies to a scorecard. And you can say, okay, to implement this, here's what I need to do. And each policy or each of those standards may translate into multiple policies and controls. So when you have that mapping, then it becomes extremely powerful. In fact, in the community, I'm a co-chair of the policy working group, and that's where we're discussing this continuous compliance, compliance as code as the next level above policies. Because policies are not, nobody like wakes up and says, I want more policies today. Come on.
I hope not. I mean, they need something else in their life.
So it's more like, what does my organization need? How do I achieve that? And how do I push, move my business forward?
Yeah.
So for that, compliance is extremely important. Achieving that, and whether it's the OWASP top 10, whether it's PCI, whether it's the NSA hardening guidelines, pick your standards. And we're seeing a lot of organizations starting to build internal standards to say, for secure Kubernetes, here's my enterprise standard, and I want to make sure every cluster is compliant. So if you kind of think of it from that perspective, you can, the policies, yes, there could be a lot, but you could put them in three or four categories, and that becomes a lot simpler from a mental model perspective.
Right. It's kind of what people normally recommend for resolving vulnerabilities across an organization as well. You can't just solve all vulnerabilities like 1, 2, 3, 4. But what you can do is, hey, let's look at all SQL injection, or let's look at all cross-site scripting. Just pick a category and go with that. Is that kind of sounds like very similar? You're recommending.
Very much. Let's take an example. You start with NIST 853, and maybe there's like some recommendation there that says everything must be encrypted. So you can take that and you could say, okay, for me to achieve that recommendation, here are the four policies that must pass. And then you have policy as code. So you're making sure So how do you prove to an auditor every cluster has those policies? How do you make sure the policies are actually working, are doing what they're supposed to be, and capture the results for those? And then how do you map that back to your standard that you started out with and say, okay, now I can tell Tuesday, October 5th, yes, this was my posture and this policy's passed, so I was compliant to the standard that I want to recommend or mandate for my organization.
Right. I know you kind of co-chair the policy group that you were mentioning.
Yeah.
How do you see people do compliance in Kubernetes using policy management? I know I'm putting you in the spot for this, but is there an example? Like to your point about the NIST framework, I have four policies in there. Like, how do you even show that? So would that be the GitOps flow that I say, oh, my pull request and everything kind of going through?
So that's the idea. So you want to even take that and policy management. And one of the reasons why Kiverno resonates so much in the community, in the Kubernetes community, is because it allows that GitOps workflow for policies. It's just policies are just a Kubernetes resource. Policy reports are standardized. By the way, the Kiverno reports are in a standard format, which the policy work group gave kind of chartered as well as promotes. And it's not just Kiverno reports. You could have reports from runtime engines like Falco as well as KubeArmor. You could have reports coming from vulnerability scanners like Trivi and others. So there are community-based adapters to take all of these and offer the policy results in a standard format, which is super to completing that loop, because policies are one piece of your overall security puzzle. You still need other tools to complete that. Yeah. But if you put all of this together, and now when you have the standard results, the next thing we're building, and by the way, commercial vendors like my company, as well as other companies, we provide these solutions on top of these open source building blocks. But even in the community, we're exploring to say, how do we at least define that mapping? How do we make it easy for anybody? And can we control that mapping as code itself? So why not make that a Kubernetes read, which is in your management plane or in the policy parlance, it would be in your policy administration point or your PAP. So that would be something that's managed in a management cluster, but then all of your user clusters will ensure that they are reporting that and feeding that back so you can get the right results and compliance reports.
Right. And how many people who have successfully gone through this scenario?
At some organizations, but very few have. And this is where better tooling, better projects is required. So there's a lot of ongoing work. And it's across companies like our company, as well as then like several other larger companies involved in the policy working group, also in SIG security, to promote these sort of ideas and patterns. But the first thing for the last 12 to 18 months, look, I mean, maybe like 18 months ago, if you ask somebody Kubernetes policies, they're like, yeah, it has policies. What do I need to do?
Yeah,
so the first step was make sure everybody understands that. And once we have the policy building blocks, now we can get to higher level business functions, which is where the value is at. Yeah. And that's what we're super excited about.
Actually, that's a good point as well, because policies by itself don't make any sense unless they tie up to a business function. Because how do you sell it to the, I guess, the business owner at the end of the day? They're the ones who are saying yes or no for a policy, whether encryption or no encryption. They're the ones who are kind of putting the foot down for it. So that's, you're finding people are finding value from that perspective as well, that they are able to link policies to your business.
Absolutely. So it's very critical. Like, again, if you want to say, okay, I want supply chain security as an example.
Yeah.
But what does that mean? It's great that an organization wants that. They want to improve their posture there, but how do you translate it into policies? How do you get back the results? And in the past, the typical thing has to be to say, okay, let's find a vendor who can do this. But that world has changed, right? Now you want more flexibility. You want more open source projects. You want things, it's more pluggable with systems like Kubernetes. So that's what makes it very powerful. And there's this rise of platform engineering that goes with that, which takes on the security role as
right, because compliance code is an interesting one as well, because I think a lot of people, to your point, they come up with the idea that, okay, my four policies for encryption are based on my NIST 800 or whatever, and I go down the path of implementing them. Now, is this like a primarily a Kiverno concept, or is it like Kubernetes by itself natively supports it?
So no, Kubernetes doesn't support it. So you would need a policy engine to enforce those configurations, right?
Right.
And in the past, like in the early days of Kubernetes, you would have to rely on a proprietary product or tool. what we've done with the policy working group and now with Kiverno as a policy engine focused on Kubernetes to make that a lot easier, to make it, again, this changes per organization. Because just imagine, so you say, okay, I need encryption, but some organization may say, look, I'm already using encrypted SSDs, so I'm going to change that to meet my needs.
Yeah.
So you need that flexibility. And in the past, that just wasn't possible. But now with Kiverno, you can. And with, so that's why moving those policies into declarative Kubernetes configurations, that's the innovation and, again, the game changer, right, for that Kiverno brought to the table.
And so Kubernetes can go to a level of saying it can understand if the container is encrypted or not or signed or not as well. Or is it, like, more to your point, that's a policy defined because port security cannot do this, where it can say, oh, my, the container that I'm using is signed. It can't do that by itself.
No, it cannot. Yeah, so you would need additional policies. So Kubernetes has all the constructs. So think of it this way. Kubernetes, it's a toolbox. It gives you all the tools, but it doesn't know what you're trying to build. So you have to get the blueprints. You have to understand what you're trying to build and kind of figure that out. Now, part of that, of course, is the policy and governance. So Kubernetes gives you all of the constructs to encrypt software, to make sure through admission controllers to check for signatures or SBOMs before allowing something to run. Whether you do it or not is up to you, right? So that a policy engine comes in. And then there's another kind of layer. This gets a little bit meta, but it's like, okay, if you're using policies across all these clusters, who's managing the policies? So that's where GitOps comes in. It's a very interesting, but you complete that full loop and get the policy reports, the results, and then, of course, create the right business value again, which is where everybody should be.
I feel like there's a maturity curve here. If I were to put this on a scale and people are listening to you going, oh, Jim, this is so awesome. This is exciting. I want to do policy as code, compliance as code to the extreme as well, if they can convince your auditors to accept that. What do you feel is a maturity curve for something like deploying a policy engine into an organization with Kubernetes? It's like, I've got bare metal Kubernetes, I've got managed Kubernetes, I've got like a lot of complexity there as well. Yep. How do you normally see organizations do it in the conversations you've had? Where does one normally start and how mature can someone get?
Right. So you always want to crawl, walk, run. So you want to kind of first start with your simple steps, so which get you there. So making sure every cluster has a policy engine, and regardless of which policy engine you choose, at least get a policy engine in place. Making sure you can start managing these policies for your organization, just like you would manage Kubernetes resources, is super important. If you're relying on a vendor to give you the policies, you're kind of doing it a little bit wrong. You have to think a little broader than that. You have to make sure that you're comfortable with managing. And by the way, policies are not just for security, but also for automation. And Kiverno was the first to bring that innovation into the space as well, because we trigger like generation of resources, mutation of resources based on policies that can be set. So that again gives you a very powerful toolbox to solve a lot of complex problems in Kubernetes, which just couldn't be done before. Like one simple, and this is maybe kind of spoiler alert, but one of the demos that I was referring to at KubeCon, what one challenge is, if you're spinning up these clusters, how do you register the cluster back into your GitOps controller? And you could write another custom controller for that, if you kind of have the knowledge of creating your Go Kubernetes controllers.
Yeah.
If you, or you could, you would have to kind of have some glue code or a manual handoff. Kiverno can fully automate that. So it would be working with, and we're going to show that across Argo CD and cluster API and how to just make that automated end.
Right. What is a typical mature pipeline, for lack of a better word? Because you mentioned Argo CD and cluster API and stuff as well. Uh-huh. I imagine there's a particular reason why you went down that path of, oh, cluster API and Argo CD and Kiverno together. Is that what a mature, like a really mature Kubernetes pipeline looks like?
It's one implementation. The nice thing about CNCF is there's alternatives to everything. So there's flux.
It's like a shopping market. Like what kind of toothpaste you need? Mint flavored? Or like, I feel like it's like a shopping cart you can keep adding.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, the landscape is just, it's amazing to see how quickly it has exploded and continues to grow at a very fast clip, right? So, but yeah, just looking at, so the building blocks here are, you need some GitOps controller, and the two leading ones are Flux and Argo CD, right? You need a policy engine, and the two leading ones are Kiberno OPA, which is Open Policy Agent. Yeah. And then you need, if you're doing cluster provisioning on this, you have to pick your path to how are you going to provision infrastructure. You could pick cluster API, which is supported, by the way, by the Kubernetes community itself. And every major cloud, there's about 12 to 15 different cloud providers who are now creation of clusters through that. Or you could pick a project like Crossplane, which lets you not only spin up clusters, but also infrastructure, which is very powerful. So you can configure AWS infrastructure in Kubernetes or Google infrastructure or whatever your cloud provider is.
Right. As you go through the shopping cart channel, I guess, for lack of a better word, you pick your providers. I guess I imagine the recommendation is to think of policy first before you go down the path of CI/CD and you get the option out of that.
Well, because you also want to apply policy in your GitOps pipeline.
Yeah,
so for example, Flux has adopted Kiberno. It is, if you are deploying Flux, you're already using Kiberno for multi-tenancy and some other use cases. And we see that as a growing kind of thing because you also want to apply certain policies in your pipeline before something even gets to admission controls. Because if you're doing a defense in depth kind of zero trust model, you have to check at every level. And the sooner you can give the feedback back to your developers or whoever is requesting the application deploy or the code or the infrastructure, the better.
This is definitely fascinating for me because also I'm just trying to think from an average person perspective, who's listening to this and understanding the complexity of Kubernetes sometimes gets really overwhelming as well. Yeah. And to what you mentioned, okay, I've made my choices. I've found a maturity curve that I want to stick with and I'm going to go down the path of. Sounds like as a team that's trying to do Kubernetes security, you have to learn a lot of things. Like it almost feels like you have to understand the Argo CD, for lack of a better word, for how to make policy for that. How do you make policies for your, I guess, watch the watcher? So Kiberno itself, if there's RBAC or whatever, and then you go to the next level, GitOps and everything. So where do you see this kind of go in terms of, is the future that we're going to be primarily policy as code and compliance as code driven?
I think that's a very interesting kind of path we're on, right? So, and the goal here is not to, again, it's more to drive automation and to drive secure self-service. And I really like the combination of those words, because if you think about it, self-service is not difficult. I mean, you can provide self-service, but doing secure self-service is insanely difficult unless you have the right tools and the right technologies in place. So that's where we always kind of think of, and that's one of the reasons why we said for Kiberno from the beginning, look, just doing security is not enough. You need security plus automation. You have to be able to trigger some powerful automation workflows, things like that. Combining the two is when the magic happens.
Yeah.
So we believe Kiberno has that potential to simplify that. And if you adopt Kiberno across your GitOps pipelines, whether it's Flux or Argo CD, and if you adopt Kiberno as your admission controller and as your runtime scanner, you're like 80% there. And then just with open source policies and other things, you can go from like zero to secure literally in minutes, which is just fascinating in terms of what's available, the powerful tools and constructs and things that are available. Then you can step back and start customizing the policy, doing the compliance mapping. So those can be a phase two or phase three, but to get started, get the policies in place, get the policy engines, and figure out what's, just like any security realm, you would start with a threat model and say, okay, what do we want to accomplish here? Start with that and say, what are we trying to secure? Let's get the basics, and then let's get to the business value, because that's what DevSecOps is all about.
Yeah, that's a great answer there. I think the conversation would be incomplete if we don't kind of talk about the shopping mart between like a Kiberno and OPA as well. So what's the difference between the two before people trying to make a choice between OPA versus Kiberno? You can talk the good and bad and the ugly, I guess.
Absolutely. Both sides. By the way, I'm not, I like what OPA brought to the table. So they were the first policy engine within CNCF. And it's not like policies were a new concept. Everybody, we all understand policies and what it does. Like even if you're doing like Active Directory, you have your group policy. We all know what that is.
That's right.
That's nothing new. But what OPA did was it said, okay, let's come up with a common language. They chose to go the domain DSL route. So they created their own language called Rego for authorization at first. But then they were saying, okay, we could have broader use cases than that. we can plug it into things like Kubernetes. And it provides value. It kind of, but before we launched Kiberno, by the way, I mean, OPA was already popular, right? And we were really debating, is there a need for another policy engine in the Kubernetes space? Because choices are great, but like you said, it's overwhelming if you go and look at the toothpaste aisle and you see like a gazillion different choices. Like, where do I start? Just give me something that works and I want to move on, right?
Tell me
what is better. So the main problems we saw with OPA, which is why, and as we spoke to our customers, we spoke to the community and the CNCF, we kind of checked with a lot of folks in the CNCF before we made Kiberno a sandbox project. We have graduated already to incubation in about 15 months, which is pretty fast given the timelines.
Yeah.
But there, what we heard is, OPA, I understand the use cases, but Rego is not what I want to use. I don't have a team of Rego programmers. I don't want to build a team. And every time I build a team, they leave. I don't want to rely on vendors to give me these policies. I need to manage my own policies, right?
Yeah.
And what we did is we stepped back and look at this, and we initially, Kiberno was built as a module in Nirmata, but then we open sourced it. They said, why leverage Kubernetes? Kubernetes is extensible. Like we were just talking about, you can provision VMs. So why can't you provision policies?
Yeah.
And why not? So whether you, I mean, maybe there's a camp that says, okay, Kubernetes is still way too complex, way too much. But if you spent the time and effort to learn Kubernetes, you understand how to manage Kubernetes resources. You've invested in tooling around that.
Yeah.
Use all of that for policies. Why come up with something foreign, which you have to kind of fit in and try to deal with all that complexity. And then you're managing now policies, policy results, all of this as Kubernetes resources. It's very native. It's seamless for DevSecOps teams. And the other thing we decided is to say, look, we're not trying to, we want to make Kiberno full featured. We don't want to build both from an open source project and a business model point of view for our company. We didn't want to do something to say, hey, you have to come to us to simplify Kiberno. And that never scales. So we're like, look, you should be able to use Kiberno on your own. And we're happy to have you use Kiberno on your own. And we want to give you as many policies as possible, right? So, and the community has been fantastic in contributing and growing that, right? One thing we're very proud of in the Kiberno community, compared to other communities where you see a lot of vendors, but very few end users, our contributors are end users, right? So you're like, this is awesome because it's the actual users who are driving our roadmap, who are driving the policies. And of course it comes with, so we hear the feedback very quickly. If there's a single challenge in Kiberno, we will hear it because it's in so many production clusters running at scale that all of these things becomes very critical. But going back to the main differences, so it's that policy language. Kiberno is kind of, you can think of it as a no code for policies. You can manage those as declarative resources and apply all the policy. There's no other language to learn. Second thing is reports and policy results. It's meant for DevSecOps. So you don't have to go to some external tool or some other way of finding these results. They are very much geared towards your developers to see that results and to understand how to deal with that. And the third thing I'll point out is that security plus automation. So OPA can only do the validation and checks. It cannot do any of the automation. So you are left on your own to kind of do that automation, which we believe is the missing piece in getting to a higher level of policy as code, security as code, compliance as code.
I think that's a great explanation. And Rego definitely has its challenges from what you, if you kind of ever go on the social media world, you probably hear a lot of people complain about Rego as well. So all the power to people who learn Rego, nothing wrong with that. But if there's an easier option, maybe you want to walk down that path as well.
Absolutely.
Another question that I get quite often is the difference between Kiberno and Gatekeeper.
Yeah.
And we kind of touched on this, but like a quick brief version of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So Open Policy Agent is the engine which kind of provides Rego. Yeah. But Gatekeeper is the admission controller, which also includes Open Policy Agent and is able to apply those policies at admission controls in Kubernetes.
Yeah.
So Kiberno, it's a single project. You don't need Gatekeeper plus Open Policy Agent. And it even runs, by the way, as a command line. So you can run it outside your clusters and apply policies in your CI/CD pipeline. It's just one project, one tool. So, but that's the role of Gatekeeper, is to bring OPA into Kubernetes. It also defines some constraints and other things on top, which you can manage as Kubernetes resources, but ultimately your policies have to be written in Rego.
And so this is kind of where the admission control we spoke about that is already there in Kubernetes that maps well with Kiverno. So Kiverno is working with admission controller from Kubernetes?
Yes. So Kiverno operates as an admission controller. It receives every API request. So if you download and install Kiverno, it self-registers with the API server as an admission controller. It receives every API request as a webhook, both for validation as well as mutation. And then it applies your configured policy set to those API requests.
Right. Okay. Sweet. Now that's pretty much it. I feel like the more we talk about this, the more there are depths of complexity to each of them. I mean, we kind of briefly touched on a lot of topics, but there's a lot of depths to a lot of those topics as well. Where do you normally recommend people start with policy management and start learning about it? Because it sounds like a very complex topic.
It can be, but hopefully with all the work going on in the community, as well as through other ecosystem partners, we're making this easier and easier to operate and manage at scale. So certainly to start with, Kiverno.io is our kind of one-stop shop for the project. There's links on there to join the community. You typically hang out on the Kubernetes Slack, so that's where you can come ask questions, get started with Kiverno. There's also the policy working group within the Kubernetes and CNCF community. So certainly if you're interested in policy or just want to kind of talk about how to use it, that's the right place to come to. And there's also Nirmata. So like companies like us and other vendors who are providing commercial tool solutions to kind of complete the picture for enterprises.
Awesome. No, that's kind of, thank you for that, sharing that. And awesome. Now, well, that's pretty much what we had time for, man. Thanks so much for coming in. And where can people find you, by the way, and Datha as well?
Yeah, so jim@nirmata.com is my email. So pretty easy to get to, or Jim Baguadio on Twitter or any of the Kubernetes or CNCF Slack channels. And would love to hear from folks on where they would like to see some of these technologies and tools.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. I think I'm taking away compliance and score as my biggest takeaway from this. Actually, people who want to achieve that and want to upskill in that, this is definitely a path forward. But I really appreciate you coming on board, talking about Kiverno and sharing why there's a need for us to talk about policy. Maybe not the first thing in the morning, but definitely something you should probably consider talking more about as well. But I really appreciate this. Thank you so much for coming in, man. I appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone who was tuned in online. We'll see you in the next episode on the Cloud Security Podcast. See you soon. Yeah, peace.